Welcome to St. Louis on the Air. I'm Don Marsh. If you'd like to dine out, you'll want to hear what's new in the restaurant world, and we'll fill you in with the folks from Sauce Magazine a little bit later, after we review details of yesterday's election results. In the city, Lida Cruson cruised to victory. Voters said yes to Metrolink, no to soccer. Voters in the county increased tax funding for public safety. And voters in Ferguson are sticking with their incumbent mayor. We'll talk about all of that and more with reporters Joe Manis, Rachel Lippman, and Jason Rosenbaum. They've been on these stories since the beginning of the campaign, and they join me in studio. Great to have you all.
Great to be here.
This is becoming a habit.
It is becoming a habit. Well, we have a little time between now and the next election, but let me just read you a tweet that's in front of me here that came in a few minutes ago. Dennis writes, everybody is kicking and screaming about the Major League Soccer having been defeated yesterday, Proposition 2, but Lida Cruson just made history for a 250-year-old city. That's the story. Is that the biggest story, Joe, or is it the soccer story?
Well, I think it's a sign of the times that it kind of depends where you sit on this. I think it is very historic for Cruson. She actually had tried to play down the fact that she was a woman. It wasn't like she campaigned saying, I'm a woman. Because like she was told me once, she said, well, it's kind of obvious, so why bring it up? But it was interesting last night in her victory speech that the first thing she did say was that she pointed to this fact that her victory yesterday coincided with the victory 130 years ago in this town in Kansas of the first woman elected mayor in the United States, which she thought was kind of interesting. And she did make a point of saying we broke a glass ceiling and this and that. So now that it's done, I think she does. She recognizes the historic nature of it. And a lot of people at the event last night understood the historic nature of it. I mean, there was a lot of cheering and a lot of pleasure about that. But again, it wasn't something that she campaigned on. And for most of the people in the room, when you talk to them, they're focused on the issues that she's going to have to deal with, which is mainly crime and the finances, city finances.
She proved she's got a good research team if she came up with that 130th anniversary.
I think Rachel. It was part of it was that it was just kind of anticlimactic in a way. It was just kind of sealing what we sort of knew was going to happen from March. It would have been a bigger story, I think, if she hadn't won, because that just meant something had gone completely upside down in the universe. So while, yes, it confirmed that she is now officially going to be the one taking office April 18th, it wasn't like it was a huge, shocking surprise that she'd won. And whereas soccer was an unknown, it was more of a, last night was more of a coronation for now Mayor-elect Cruson than really sort of an election.
Good point. Still, she was kind of wary because of her very razor close victory in March. She wore pretty much the same outfit. She had the same earrings on. She even showed them to me because she called them her lucky earrings. These ones she picked up from a thrift shop in Cherokee Street. And so she didn't come out till almost 10 o'clock. I mean, she was circulating early because I'd got there early. So she was circling a little early around 8 just briefly. And then she went in the back and they did not come out again until just right before 10.
Oh, yeah, but that's TV.
Well, no, but my point is she had told me when I talked to her around 8, she said, she wanted to make sure that there was enough results. And, I mean, even though it looked good, she just didn't want to rely on it.
Let's demystify some of the mystery here. St. Louis City is a 70 to 80% Democratic jurisdiction, and we can go with this fantasy that a Republican can hypothetically win, maybe if it's split like 7 ways, but it's not going to happen.
Well, it happened 70 years ago.
It happened 70 years ago when the Republicans that's 70 years ago. But anyways.
Yeah, but it was interesting because she was trying not to – she didn't want to do anything that she thought would appear too preemptive.
Also very active in the last week or so in encouraging people to go out to vote. I mean, politicians normally do that anyway, but she was very active, I thought.
Yeah, because in a low turnout election, while it would have been a stretch, I mean, still, you just never know. I mean, because look, she never expected that primary for her victory to be less than 900 votes.
Yeah. Well, I think that was a failing of that crack research team then. I mean, I'm not sure. I don't know. I mean,
actually, well, I talked with somebody who was on her team last night. I think that she started off name recognition wise pretty low on the totem pole, especially when, you know, people like Gregory FX Daily were considering being in the race. So she actually raised her profile throughout the campaign by, you know, consolidating support, especially after Sam Dotson and Daly decided not to run in, by getting enough money to appear on TV. So in some ways, like, she started off at a weaker position than when she ended, which is interesting in many respects.
There's an awful lot of chatter out there today about the loss of the soccer
proposition.
Mm-hmm. It's sports.
Can I provide you with a piece of evidence of that?
That's why I brought it up.
So the Twitter reaction and Facebook reaction to this has been much harsher than even when the Rams left. In fact, when I pointed out on Twitter that Prop 2's failure means a use tax increase, which is coming because Prop 1 – raise the sales tax and the use tax, is slated to go to affordable housing, public health, and public safety programs, which is written in city statute. Mm-hmm. I was just stating a fact. Somebody tweeted, "Do you lie to like this to your child?" And this is just a sampling of the anger that people have over the failure of this. Just stating a fact of where this money is going to go prompts people to say, "You're a liar," or "You're wrong." And I'm not wrong on this, folks. That's what the law says, and the mayor's spokesperson confirmed that that's what's slated to happen.
And what strikes me about this is sort of where the anger comes from. I've had friends commenting on this on Facebook on both sides of the issue to people in the county who are like, "We need soccer, we need soccer, we need soccer." And they're like, "Look, you're not the one who has to live with this. You're not the one who would be paying more for paying more for stuff. It's going to put the sales tax up around 12% in some places with all of the special districts. You're not the one who sees the need for where this money is supposed to go: public safety, affordable housing." Jason, what was the third part of that?
Public health.
Public health. Stop telling us what you think the region needs that's going to be on our back.
And I want to just make this point because I think it's been understated. I don't think that getting the county involved would have been an automatic process. First of all, you would have had to have the county executive at least philosophically on board and engaged a lot more than he was by SCSTL. I don't feel like the engagement occurred to where that could happen. Then it would have had to go through a county council that's hostile to County Executive Stanger. And then it would have had to get approved in a countywide vote where the voting dynamics are very different from in the city. So I think that I understand the reason, from at least a practical perspective, the county wasn't involved. But I also understand that there was a lot of angst among city residents that they were asking to do this alone. I just wanted to put that background out there.
Let me just point out that Steve Stanger said on this program last week that the county was never asked by anybody to be a participant.
I've heard that too. And I feel like there needs to be a formal ask for the county to be involved if that's going to happen. You can't expect Stanger to just say, "I'm going to give county money," if they're not formally asked to do that. I think they were formally asked in the Rams situation initially, but they were taken off when, you know, he was pretty adamant that there'd be a countywide vote on that.
Yeah.
So,
but I thought this was intriguing that you had this kind of fight, not between the city and county, but people saying, "Well, the county should have been involved," or, "Well, because the county wasn't involved." I thought it was interesting is that I could imagine 10 years ago even, that wouldn't have been the debate. People would have been resistant to some of this. And I think this does show that there may be more city-county talk on things. I mean, kind of on whatever it is, that people realize that on big projects like this, you've got to either have two of them or forget it.
Which is understandable, but let's just be hypothetical and say the city and county were one entity, and this vote would have
taken. Not gonna happen.
And this vote would have taken part across both jurisdictions. I don't think it's a sure thing in St. Louis County, where there are far more Republicans who are philosophically opposed to publicly funding stadiums, and a large African American population, which I don't think is very crazy about funding stadiums either, as we saw in the ward by ward breakdowns. Many African American wards this failed by large margins. I don't think it would have necessarily passed.
Well,
in the county.
I'm not saying it would, but what I'm saying is that there would be that there's this pressure for more engagement between the two. And I thought it was interesting that Stanger showed up last night at Crewson's event mm-hmm. right at the end, and so I actually talked to him, not just about stadium, but other things. But one of the things that I recorded him on was I was asking him how he and Crewson might work together, why yeah, was
sure.
there.
Right.
And he was emphasizing that he thought this was a new day, that she was his friend. So I think you're going to see at least publicly more of a and he said well, there was a number of issues that they were talking about working together on.
The only thing I wonder, just in this hypothetical, it's put to a city county united vote, is whether the fact that the county is at least being asked to get involved moves people in the city off of yes. their opposition to it being a city project only.
I agree
that
with
they
that.
May
exactly.
not may hypothetically be okay with public funding for stadiums as long as everyone is involved.
I've heard that argument from even some very strong opponents of this plan, that if more jurisdictions were involved, I think that would have tempered their opposition. So.
Yeah. Well, good point, Rachel.
Folks certainly are worked up about it. We have any number of tweets here. Joshua writing, try to convince a city full of poor black folks to support a white suburban sport and expect it to pass. Clueless county residents, if you're mad at the city isn't doing enough for you, maybe you should try doing more for the city. I mean, there's really a lot
well,
of
Well, I think that's there. A legitimate point. In fact, Alderman Terry Kennedy brought this up very explicitly. And he represents the 18th Ward, which is kind of a north-central ward with yeah. a lot of crime and poverty, that it's very difficult for his constituents to get excited about a project based off the profit motivations of people with money. I'm almost directly quoting them. Mm-hmm. And, you know, it doesn't matter which part of the city you go to, whether it's north or south. If it has a lot of people that are dealing with socioeconomic problems, poverty, racial divides – the idea of building a soccer stadium doesn't seem like a big priority. And even when you look at the ward by wards, it even failed in some parts which are working class or middle class in South St. Louis. The fact that it got 40% opposition in my beloved 16th Ward shows that even in middle to upper middle class parts of the city, there was a lot of opposition there from a philosophical perspective that it wasn't the right priority.
To your point, Joe, that this could lead to better cooperation between the city and the county. Metrolink expansion passed yesterday.
Yes.
However, the city and the county are still very much at odds about that as to what form that's going to take. So that's one place where they could sit down and maybe talk.
Yeah, but I thought at least it was movement. I mean, I got to tell you, and this is being an older person, I cannot remember the last time that a county executive showed up at a victory party for a St. Louis mayor. I mean,
Julie didn't go to Slay in 13?
I think, well, he may have, but before that, I mean, it just didn't happen. They might like call and talk to each other and yeah. say, this is great, but it was somehow it was seemed too overt, you know, for one to show up. And the fact, I mean, because everyone was buzzing that Stanger had showed up on primary yeah. night at her event, although he stayed in the background until it was clear she had won. I mean, last night he and some other people, Prop P people, all you know, kind of trooped in at the end, and I just don't recall seeing that so overtly. So I think part of it is because Stanger, you know, he had a politically, he had a couple victories.
Mm-hmm.
He won on Prop P, and he had backed her. Yeah. And there are some other county officials who had backed others. And so it puts him in a stronger political position, which kind of helps him since he does face this divided council on a number of things.
Got to take a break here. Let's do that now. Come back and we'll continue our conversation about the results of yesterday's election in this region with Joe Manis, Jason Rosenbaum, and Rachel Lippman. This is St. Louis on the Air on St. Louis Public Radio, 90.7 KWMU. Hello again and welcome back. We continue our conversation taking a look at what happened yesterday regionally and the elections that took place. Joe Manis, Jason Rosenbaum, and Rachel Lippman are with me in studio. Before we get away from the soccer story, if we can indeed get away from it, let's bring in a call from South Orange, New Jersey. We have a friend in Zach who is listening online. Zach, thanks for being with us. Go ahead.
Hi. Thank you. Thanks so much for taking my call. So my main comment regarding MLS specifically is how I really feel that it was a dropped ball on the side of the ownership group. I mean, I don't live in the St. Louis area anymore, but I have watched this closely. So what I think is unfortunate is, from what I understood, is they really sold this to county residents and even St. Charles and Illinois residents. But I really feel there was a massive lack of effort to really convince city voters that this is something they should vote for. I mean, my friends that live in the city said, this is $60 million that we could put towards public safety. So, you know, that's just what I think is really unfortunate is, you know, they really didn't do a really good job in convincing city voters that this is, in fact, something that they should vote for.
All right, Zach, thanks for the call.
Jason? I think that that was definitely, that definitely resonated. And I think that the fact that the use tax traditionally goes to things like affordable housing, public safety, public health, and that raising the sales tax would direct it toward those things, but passing Prop 2 would send it to a stadium. It really did present voters with a choice. Do you fund those aforementioned programs or do you fund a stadium? And I think a lot of people had a real – I think a lot of people had a hard time choosing a stadium over city services.
But if I just may make the point, they did not choose Proposition NS for stabilizing vacant housing.
Well, that is also, remember, a property tax increase. So that hit needed a 67% threshold in the city. It would have passed if it had been anything other than a property tax increase.
Exactly.
I think the ownership group underestimated the appeal of soccer in the city. I think for some reason they thought overestimated. Thank you for that. Overestimated the appeal of MLS in the city. For whatever reason, maybe they didn't realize how many of the people who are FC St. Louis supporters are in the county. But it just kind of seemed to be they thought that the appeal of soccer was going to be enough. And like what Jason said and the caller Zach said, just didn't take a look at the actual practical problems that the city's dealing with, that it's promised so far off in the future the benefits of it when you can automatically get additional money for affordable housing, public health, public safety, things that are needed in the St. Louis area. And that a promise of, you know, in the future you will have an MLS team didn't really seem to click. They overestimated the appeal of a soccer team.
Now, at the christening event, when we were waiting around, a lot of people were saying that they thought that the advocacy group hadn't done enough to appeal to women. And they said, here, you know, you've got soccer moms, you've got a lot of women who play or their kids play. They were talking about the Wash U's championship women's team, that there were, and some of the championship women's high school teams in the city. They were saying none of that was like utilized for either ads or appeals or whatever, and they thought that might have made a difference. And this is before the vote totals came in. I thought that was intriguing.
They seem to be appealing to a very specific block of voters and thinking that that would be enough to get it over the hump, and I just don't think they knew how big that block of voters in the city actually was.
You know, I think you're right. I've always felt that way, that any professional soccer enterprise that's ever occurred here has failed. You know, I mean, it's popular in Catholic schools and it's popular in a lot of places. And when Bosnian teams come to St. Louis, they sell out. But in any other form, it's not been successful.
Yeah, and I think another thing to keep in mind here is while the MLS is growing in popularity, in the grand scheme of soccer, it's seen as kind of a lesser league, especially compared to the Premier League or La Liga. And, you know, it does have a fan base, and in some places the fan base is very strong. But I think that fact that I just mentioned kind of tempers enthusiasm in many respects.
And there's a fatigue factor, too. People are tired of this the same old story of funding stadiums.
Yeah, I think that the whole Rams debacle probably affected some people psychologically. I mean, even if these guys had a better presentation.
I think they knew they had to take it to the voters after the Rams debacle. Mm-hmm. They couldn't get away with just doing it at the level or at the Board of Aldermen level. Some people, I think, realized that it was going to fail. I think a lot of the other politicians just didn't, though.
Yeah. Let's move on to some other things. Any surprises that popped up yesterday to any of you? No surprise in Ferguson, Jason, that Mayor Knowles has won re-election.
Well, I knew that race was going to be competitive because Ella Jones won an open council seat, and she was a formidable candidate who had a lot of support within Ferguson, both in the African-American community and in parts of the white community that has been demanding change. But having known James Knowles for many years and knowing how persistent he's been in not only staying in office after the Michael Brown shooting, but also how he's managed to become mayor in the first place and be on the city council at age 25, I knew that he was taking this extremely seriously and was campaigning very, very hard and really, truly felt like he still had a lot to give to a community that he's lived for his entire life. And the results showed he won by almost 10 percentage points.
14, actually, 14. I think, by the end of the night. Yeah.
And I mean, just stepping back a little bit, regardless of the fact that the mayor's office in Ferguson is not, I don't want to say it's symbolic, but it doesn't handle the day-to-day operations. Just the fact that a political elected official went through what he went through, experienced just immense criticism, not only in Ferguson, but across the nation. And, you know, managed to win re-election after that, I think shows that he had a lot of support still in Ferguson, that he took his re-election seriously, and that people thought that he handled the crisis that followed well enough to be re-elected.
At our forum last week, a number of people there suggested that if the African-American vote turned out, that she would win, and obviously that didn't happen.
I don't know exactly what the turnout numbers were, but one of the things that people have mentioned over the last few years is that the African-American population in Ferguson tends to be transient, which means that they may come from another city, but they may not register to vote there.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And I think that that has always been an issue, probably not only in Ferguson, but in a lot of places in North St. Louis County, since there are so many cities and people sometimes move all the time. They may not register to vote in a certain place. It's the same thing in St. Louis City. People move between wards all the time, regardless of their race, and sometimes they don't change their registration. I think it's a similar dynamic there, and it could be one of the reasons that the turnout tends historically not to be strong among African Americans.
And this group may have been sort of an outside group in Ferguson, but there were some people who, in kind of the activist community, again, maybe sort of more, I don't want to say fringe, but not the core group of individuals, who didn't really like Ella Jones for whatever reason. So if you don't coalesce the people who want change around your vote, or they don't come out to vote, then you're going to have the people who's you're going to have the candidate whose supporters are fired up, which was Knowles' supporters, coming out voting for their candidate and others not voting for a different candidate, if that makes any sense. There was a group that didn't particularly like Jones necessarily, maybe weren't going to go out and vote for her, whereas Knowles' supporters were very much, we need to get him back in office.
It's not surprising, Joe, that that race received as much attention as it did because it is Ferguson, but there are a lot of mayor's races run yesterday on both sides of the river.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. I mean, there was a lot of stuff going on. Yeah. But one thing I do want to mention about Knowles that Jason brought up too, because I've interviewed him several times. The fact that he's local, the fact that he's lived there for decades, that means something. I mean, people forget. You know, these are small communities. And whether they like somebody or don't, there's a personal nature to it because most people know him. Mm-hmm. And I think that he probably got points for the fact that he stuck it out.
And just as a side note, not only do I believe he is, I guess, undefeated in running for mayor, James Knowles is also undefeated against Randy Orton in amateur wrestling. Randy Orton is a famous WWE wrestler, and Knowles' claim to fame is defeating Orton pretty handily when they're both in high school.
So there is a backstory there. Thank you for that.
How on earth do you retain all of this information?
Well, that's a piece of knowledge that's hard to forget given my obsession with professional wrestling.
That is a reasonable point.
I thought
point.
You had the same research people that Lyda Crewson.
They might. I think Lyda Crewson is probably a Randy Orton fan too. So. Yeah.
But we can't get away from soccer apparently because John in Chesterfield wants to make a point about it. So let's bring him in. John, you're on the air. Go ahead.
Hi. Yeah, I just want to make the comment. I've been seeing a lot of kind of commentary on Twitter. I'm a former city resident who now lives out in the county, and it seems like a lot of county residents, there seems to be some disappointment in the outcome of the vote, and there seems to be a lot of city residents who are kind of using this as a way to say, well, you know what, maybe if the city and the county were reincorporated or unified, then maybe there's a way to potentially finance the stadium at a lower cost for a business or resident and also still have the benefit of the financial advantages that having an MLS team will. So I'm just curious as to whether or not the panel thinks that this will re-jettison sort of the city-county unification argument.
Well, let's go back to Joe, who was making that point, the possibility of that point earlier.
Well, I don't know if people are ready for a merger or anything, but I think this could signal that there may be more interest, especially among county residents who cared about this, to at least maybe have more common involvement in certain issues. I mean, because there's nothing that prevents. I mean, there's already a joint economic council. There's some joint healthcare stuff. There's nothing that prevents the city and county from not coming up with some sort of framework to work together more on certain things like this. They already do in the convention center and other things.
Yeah.
So, and this may ignite some of that.
It's possible, but I think that it's going to take more than a soccer stadium to get St. Louis and St. Louis County to unite. So.
I'm doing a kind of an interesting thought experiment in my head right now is to, you know, if you turned around to a county voter who was saying, we, you know, a county needs to get involved, maybe this will spark the conversation. And you say, okay, do you want your sales tax to be 12, 13, 14, 15% to help fund a soccer stadium? Like what they end up saying. If the support is just sort of conceptual because someone else is voting to fund it, and when the, you know, rubber hits the road, they're like, well, I don't know. It's a tax increase, especially kind of given some of the politics within the county.
But it might not have been as hard. If the county had been involved, that tax increase wouldn't have had to have been nearly so
yeah,
hard.
I mean, couldn't the county generate $60 million from some tax increase in a year? I mean, Prop P is going to, what, generate $80 million a year?
Yes.
It's a half cent sales
amount.
Tax?
It's the same amount.
Like
yeah.
The county could literally get $60 million by doing a one-year half cent sales tax increase and then sunset it, right?
Yeah.
Theoretically, yeah.
So, I mean, maybe that's their plan B. I know Jim Cavanaugh said there's no plan B, but I mean, if county voters want, if county soccer fans want a stadium that badly, I have just provided an avenue for that to occur.
And that's my question is whether when they actually are presented with, you know, a sales tax increase, however long or short it needs to be, is whether they are willing to be like, okay, I'm going to bite the bullet and do this, or if it is really just theoretical, I want to play with someone else's money.
Yeah.
You know, I haven't heard this kind of conversation in a long time. This soccer thing has really gotten people talking.
But the Rams situation did too, and I found this to be interesting because – interesting is a lame word, by the way. But
I use it a lot.
As somebody who covered the Rams situation very closely and covered this situation with some help from my esteemed colleagues like Rachel Lippman and Ryan Delaney, there is just an immense amount of interest on both sides about any time sports and public policy have a confluence, whether it be the people that want a stadium or the people that are adamantly opposed to it. I think that's what makes it so interesting from just an interest perspective. But is it really something that rises to the level of the issues that we've been talking about for years and years that haven't been solved in the St. Louis region? I'm not sure. I tend to think no.
But that's what's interesting about it.
Yes.
Yeah, but 25 years ago, I was heavily involved in the Post-Dispatch coverage when the Rams were first being wooed to come here, the new stadium and all this and that, and dealing with Eagleton and all the secret meetings. I flew down to Jacksonville several times. I mean, the amount of activity, the amount of political involvement. I mean, you had Dick Gephardt, who's heavily involved, all that. I rarely saw that on any other issue in 25 years since then.
Yeah.
The amount of public excitement, the amount of political engagement, the amount of we can do this and all this and that. And it was around a stadium.
Yep.
Yeah, exactly.
Well, but I'm also wondering, too, and granted, this was not something I was paying attention to at that level when the Rams got here, was – I didn't see enthusiasm among politicians necessarily for the stadium. You had Slay kind of coming out in support of it, but I'm not sure if he put any money towards the campaign. It was really being driven by these millionaires. I don't know if there's any billionaires in there, but, you know, multi-millionaires, none of whom actually lived in the city. Mm-hmm. That was the thing. The, you know, the headquarters for the SCSTL had a county address. All of the guys are working out in the county. And what you're talking about was you had politicians working together, getting their base, you know, get going. And
right.
this wasn't political. You had a lot of political opposition at like levels where people are paying attention in local elections, aldermen and alderwomen, local activists groups against it. You didn't see a lot of politicians really come out and say, yes, this is going to be awesome for the city. I mean, even Mayor-elect Crewson has been very kind of circumspect
yes.
about it, saying, well, I really don't think the city should own the stadium mm-hmm. instead of being like, yes, let's do this and putting muscle behind
it. And I will say this, pretty much every ward that went for Tashara Jones, I think, voted this down, mm-hmm. sometimes by large margins. Even some wards that went for Crewson, like her own 28th mm-hmm. ward, which is kind of Central West End, Skinker DeValver, voted mm-hmm. this down. So I think that just shows, like, you know, even – I don't think Tashara Jones spent any money to defeat this, but she mm-hmm. was very vocal mm-hmm. Publicly about it. And I think her voters listened to her and voted against this. I mean, I'm not sure if that was the only reason, but it probably didn't hurt, you know.
It passed in wards 5, 7, 10, 13, 16, 23, and 24. So those are sort of southwest central-ish – wards.
And the numbers
That's
in
8 of 28.
And the numbers in Southwest City and South City were not particularly strong mm-hmm. for this. So
there's a couple where it only passed by a few votes.
Only a couple of minutes left. Rachel, no real change in the Board of Aldermen.
No, I mean, those were all going to be decided in the primary. No. I guess the only thing that mm-hmm. might have maybe happened would have been a Republican getting in the 16th, but mm-hmm. that didn't happen.
That didn't happen.
And the Recorder of Deeds, Sharon Carpenter, keeps her job.
Yes, Quigley mania runs wild through St. Louis.
That's fascinating. Did that surprise you, Joe?
No, because A, it needed 60%,
yeah, sure.
which is hard to get.
Yeah.
B, the City Democratic Central Committee put out some stuff against it. C, I think some people were kind of suspicious about it because Rex Ziegfeld had put mm-hmm. money into this.
Yeah.
And Carpenter, whether one agrees or disagrees, if they believe she stayed in office too long or whatever, she had emphasized that this was not about her. She said this needs to be focused on the office, whether I'm here or not. You need a recorder of deeds. You need somebody who keeps all these records. And she was also raising some legal questions, which I'm not going to bore with because it doesn't matter now. But I think, though, it does go to show that she has fought off so many efforts the last 3-4 years to get rid of her.
Yeah.
And she's, in many cases, decisively. So I think that it does go to show that
Quigley mania cannot be extinguished.
Yes.
She's and it's it was an interesting story, too, Jason, right?
It was interesting.
She was also the former Democratic Party chairman of the city, so she's got some political clout.
Oh, I mean, I've known Sharon for decades.
Sure.
And she had way back in the day. I mean, she was Francis Lay's babysitter when he was a little boy. So, I mean, there's a lot of ties here. She was close to actually her husband. Her late husband had been had worked for Dick Gephardt way back when Dick was a congressman. So, she had strong political ties. And even though many of the people that she was involved with have either deceased or retired, she still has a lot of political clout in the city. And I think this showed that. I mean, it did get over 50%. Mm-hmm. So you would have to, if I were her, I'd give you some pause. But it didn't get 60.
Well, and the other thing, too, though, is I'm not sure how much of it where it did pass was because it was a recorder of deeds. I think a lot of people saw body cameras and didn't necessarily care what the mechanism was to get the body cameras, that it was more pro-body cameras than it was anti-Sharon Carpenter.
Yeah.
Good point.
And we should point out that the turnout yesterday was a little bit better than the primary, which is interesting.
Well, it does show the power of sports.
I mean, that's pretty surprising. I mean, that didn't happen in 2013 when the arch tax was there. And I think it does show that this soccer stadium whipped up people into a voting frenzy.
It still was only 30%, right? Which
yes.
is not which is
a mild frenzy.
Right. Anything? Let's have a final takeaway, Rachel. Your takeaway from yesterday. Anything you want to mention?
I was kind of intrigued by how many votes Lida picked up between the primary and the general. In 2013, which was Slay's final election, there was a contested primary, and then the number of votes he picked up in the general dropped way off. Now, looking at 2017, the race was a little bit more competitive, so you're kind of going to naturally pick up votes as other candidates start to kind of come around you. But, you know, she had 17,000 votes total in the primary and got to almost 39,000 plus in the general. So there were obviously supporters of some candidates who decided, yes, you know, I'm going to show your support. She wasn't just relying on getting those same people out to vote.
Jason, what caught your attention?
My final thought is that activists who supported presidential candidate Bernie Sanders, who are sometimes dubbed as the quote-unquote progressives, really showcased, I think, their political acumen. They didn't spend basically any money, but I think that the aldermen and some of the committee people and some of just the on-the-ground activists really mobilized pretty effectively against Proposition 2. And then they show, even if they're not the majority, maybe they are the majority, I don't know, they have shown through this and through almost getting Tashara Jones in office that they're a political force that will be relevant for quite some time.
Joe?
Well, it's like what I said earlier. I think I'm very intrigued by how much Stanger and Crewson may work together. And again, the fact that last night was a good night for him, and the fact that he was pretty, you know, showing up at the city thing, that means something. I'm not sure what yet, but I think it means something.
Well, interesting discussion, folks. Folks who want to know more about what happened yesterday, if they don't already, can find information on our website at stlpublicradio.org. Stories written by my three guests, Joe Manis, Jason Rosenbaum, and Rachel Lippman. Thank you so much for being with us, guys. Good to talk to you. Hope you get a nap this afternoon after a long day yesterday. Thank you all.
Thank you.
This is St. Louis on the Air on St. Louis Public Radio, 90.7 KWMU.